97.5, The Fanatic. It's week six in the NFL, and the Birds find themselves with only one win in a weak division. The 4-1 Ravens are in town as the Eagles look to get back in the win column. This is the Ron Jaworski Show, live from Downingtown Country Club. Now here's your host, Ron Jaworski.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Great crowd on here, on hand here at Downingtown Country Club for the Ron Jaworski Show. And we are coming to you live. Nice to see some folks in the audience. Of course, certainly 6 feet apart, wearing masks, doing all the right things. So everything is absolutely fantastic here at Downingtown. Tonight's show is sponsored by Bradford White Water Heaters. Thanks to my friend Carl Pinto and all the wonderful people at Bradford White, built to be the very best. And, of course, thanks to our friends at Miller Lite, Mark Kramer, Brendan Dalton. We got our Miller Lights here. We got a special on Miller Lights. And I've got a few in front of me, as a matter of fact. So enjoying a cold beverage. We're going to talk some real drill-down Eagles football tonight. Each year I get to do this show during the football season. And every show I love doing. It's absolutely phenomenal, fantastic. Not because I'm doing it, because of the people that we get on the show and get some incredible insights. But I got to be honest with you. I get some great people, but there's always one show that I look forward to when I could reunite with the coach, Coach Vermeil. It's always special. It means so much to me because we've been together since 1973, me as a player and Coach Vermeil as a coach. My foundation of football thought was formed by Dick Vermeil as an assistant coach and a head coach, and I'm working for him. My football philosophy, statistically and playing on the field, has been a profile that Dick Vermeil taught me, what it takes to win football games. Also, how to act decent as a human being, how to give back in the community. Just amazing things I learned from my coach. And it's always exciting when I'm going to get the coach to spend 45, 50 minutes with him and break down the Eagles season. You know, the Eagles game, what the future looks like. And it's always a very, very great evening for me because, sometimes in this business, you get down and you talk about other things other than the game. You talk about the personalities. You talk about good coaching, good players, bad coaching, who made the mistakes, what challenges there were in the course of the game. But with the coach, man, we drill down. We get to the reasons why teams win, why teams lose, and in a very honest way. And when you look at this Eagles season right now, it's not a good record. We know that at 1-3-1, but this is an awful division where probably 6-9-1 may win the division, and likely probably would when you look at the play of the Cowboys, Washington's football team, and the New York Giants. It could be a good year for the Eagles. But always under pressure is the quarterback, and I'll speak for Carson Wentz as we move on. Always under pressure is the head coach, Doug Peterson, and Coach Vermeil will expound upon his thoughts about the coach. Maybe the defense coordinator, Jim Schwartz, who's been under the gun this week. So we'll break all those down for you and give our honest, down-to-earth opinion. So it gives me, once again, great pleasure to introduce the guy that's been a great football coach, a Super Bowl champion, a coach of the year, a great mentor, not only to me, but every player that played for him, the legendary Coach Dick Vermeil. Welcome, Coach, to the Ron Jaworski Show here at the Downingtown Country Club.
Ron, always great to line up with you again. It's always a great experience, and I'm so proud of what you have done here in Downingtown. It's a great golf course. You've improved it, and it was always a nice course.
Always nice.
But you've improved it, and you allow my grandkids and my son to play free. That's how cheap I am. But anyway, thank you for everything you've done for the community here.
All right, Coach, thank you so much. And I know it's been kind of the topic of discussion all week long. By I listen to the radios, I listen to the pundits, I talk to them, try to get some idea. So we've actually got a coach that has been in situations like Jim Schwartz was in, like Doug Peterson was in last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, pretty much the game on the line at Heinz Field, third down and 8, 2-point lead. And everyone's been kind of ripping Jim Schwartz for being in that split safety look and putting a linebacker, Nate Jerry, on a speedy wide receiver. And it was a mismatch. We get that. But as a coach, and I asked this while we were having dinner, you know, did you ever give your coordinators the authority to call timeout? Because what we heard from Jim Schwartz on Tuesday was he always had the head. He obviously was told never call timeout, because that's not what he said. But the calling timeouts is up to the head coach. What's your feeling in a situation like that? Who has the autonomy to call timeout if you're caught in a bad defense?
Well, the defensive coordinator was the head coach when the defense was on the field. Mm-hmm. So, in my opinion, you know, and I've had, you know, Marion Campbell, and my gosh, you know, Bud Carson, Peter Junton, John Bunting.
John Bunting, my old teammate. Yeah. You want a Super Bowl with those guys.
Yeah. So I would, they had no restriction. You know, they would be better in tune for what they saw and what they had planned to do and how they had prepared to call a timeout. Now, sitting next to you right now, I don't remember. Of course, at 84, there's a lot of things I don't remember. But I don't remember them ever calling timeouts, but I'm sure they did. But I would never restrict them to. And I don't think Doug probably means to do it on because he thinks he's the full authority. But I just, sometimes your process gets in the way.
Right, right. It's always the problem. Now, I've stated my case a number of times because people call me, you know, what do you think should have happened? And, hey, I've been around the league since 1973. In fact, in 1973, yeah, that's 1973, Dick Vermeil was my coach with the Los Angeles Rams. He was the running backs coach. I was the quarterback out in L.A. in 73 before he went to UCLA. So you can see our lineage goes way, way back in a wonderful way. But when you look at the situation in that game, and I'll be Ben Roethlisberger, and I can honestly say as I'm watching a game on TV, and I looked at Ben, and the minute he started to call audible, I saw the split safeties on the screen. I'm going, my God, you got Claypool, and I looked at you got, you know, Nate Jerry, who's got to cover him in a split safety look. Now, I always kind of believe this, you know, when the defense has the ability to change. When Ben Roethlisberger read the mail, it's time to change your address. Because mm-hmm. he read that split safety look. You got to get out of that.
Yeah.
And yet they didn't. So what is your feeling about a reaction to a reaction? When you know the quarterback has saw the defense, he set up a mismatch. Should the defense have audibled or got out of that type of situation?
Well, you know, I think that's really very, very difficult when you're playing against a very experienced mm-hmm. quarterback. 9 out of 10 quarterbacks would not have recognized the advantage he recognized. Okay, so that's his edge. Now, I'm going to go all the way back with you.
Uh-oh.
We're playing a Minnesota Vikings, Bud Grant. You know, Bud Grant's a Hall of Fame football coach. But they played cover 2, cover 3, these simple zones. And I gave you the authority to change the patterns of specific things when you saw the 2 or the 3, and we ended up scoring like 40-something points on them by you just making you as a quarterback experienced and talented enough when you did have, you know, you can call it audible. You know, if Roethlisberger throws that pass, it's incomplete. It's not a great play.
That's right.
You still have to throw it complete. What you always had the ability to do was when we took advantage of something unique, you could complete the pass. Then it's a good play.
Right.
See, that whole thing, we wouldn't be talking about the play that got us beat the other day if the ball was thrown incomplete. But Roethlisberger's throwing 69.7% complete right
almost
now.
Almost 70%
so, you know,
complete.
There's a lot of things that go into it. Yeah. But from blaming the defensive coordinator for being in that defense at that time, he had no way they were going to be in 5 wide receivers. Nor would he. I know I couldn't have. I don't know how he would be able to say, "Oh, if I see them in 5 wide receivers, I'm going to automatically call timeout and get them out of it."
Right, right.
It's just, you know, that's what makes the game exciting. Now imagine how exciting it's been in Pittsburgh all week. The opposite of here, okay? One guy takes all the blame. Well, Roethlisberger and a young rookie wide receiver is getting all the credit in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm a big believer in that autonomy for a quarterback. And, you know, I learned this from the coach. you know, if you call an audible, it better work.
Yeah.
Well, you had to go to that sideline and look at the coach. And if it didn't work, why'd you call that audible?
You know, so many times I'm sitting all the time now. Carol's sitting in the right chair and I'm sitting in the left chair watching Sunday games. And we'll see as many 12 teams play. And how many times the quarterback goes through all these details of calling an audible and they make 1 yard on the audible, you know? Yeah. Run, 9 times out of 10, you're better off running the play you ran. But if you have specific situations where you can gain an advantage downfield with the ball, then get into it, you know? Or we used to call read and break.
Read and break, on the move.
Yeah.
Adjust,
the side adjustment was made by the receivers after the snap of the ball if certain things happen.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, we're beating that kind of coverage with the adjustment by the receiver and the quarterback. So.
And in defense of Jim Schwartz, this is a depleted defensive team. Mm-hmm. The communication just isn't there. You had, at that time, Slay was out of the game. He had an issue. So I can understand why he did it. And you've got a bunch of young guys in there that aren't communicating, that which is so important on both sides of football. Mm-hmm. When Ben saw the, you know, pre-snap read, the defense probably anticipated, and in fact, if you look at Roby Coleman, he's trying to wave Gary back to get a little deeper, but at that point, it's almost too late because you got a wide receiver in Claypool, a fast wide receiver. So if Gary goes deep, he's going to undercut that. He'll run the under route, so it's going to be a first down.
Eight-yard first down.
So it's like no matter what you do in that situation, if they execute the way the Steelers executed, it doesn't help much.
Yeah. And I'm thinking after it's over and I'm listening to all the experts evaluating it, I say, what the hell would you want him to call on 3rd and 8 in that situation with 5 wide receivers out in the field?
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a game plan specific for 5 wide receivers on 3rd and 8. I don't know, you know.
Coach, isn't it amazing as we watch the evolution of the NFL? You throw out 5 wide receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, that was unheard of
until
the last couple of years. How much has the game changed? You mentioned Ben Roethlisberger throwing almost 70%, 69.7% complete.
Yeah.
How much has the game changed from when you were coaching, you know, in 2006 and I retired in, I don't want to say when, a long time ago?
Yeah.
How much has the game changed?
Well, the essence of the game, why you win and why you lose, is still the same. Don't turn the ball over.
Oh, amen.
And play hard on every frickin' snap because you don't know which one's going to be the most important play in the game.
Yep.
And today it's more so that way. One play is deciding it. But there's more offense today because the rules have helped. There's more offense today because I think the shorter training camps and those kinds of things, especially this year, hurts the defense more than it does the offense, because when you go into a huddle and call an offensive play, the offensive team is rehearsed every one of those things that's going on. Each player knows. But you line up on defense, you have no idea what the offensive team is going to call. And you might not have the perfect call. So you've got to adjust and play as a player. So I think the less practice time has hurt the defense is more than it's hurt the offense.
You know, you mentioned practice time, and to me, I mean, 2020 has been an unprecedented year, not only in football, but in our lives. And Carson started out slow. You know, he struggled, and I was in defense of him when, and a lot of my thoughts bear on what I learned how to play the game from Coach Jermiel and Chuck Knox and Don Shula, guys that were, you know, my head coaches. And I kept thinking, Carson's a little bit off. He's not sharp. Mechanics aren't there. Then you think about it, this offseason, there wasn't any.
Yeah.
No preseason games. Really, training camp was in T-shirts and shorts. No offseason learning. And I talked to Mike Quick and Harold Carmichael all the time, guys that were my all-time wide receivers, Hall of Famers. And we used to spend time in the offseason, April, May, June, throwing over 30,000 passes. And one year we tracked about 36,000. Mike Quick running routes, Harold Carmichael running routes. Carson Wentz didn't have that opportunity this year. So you can expect the timing to be a little bit off with all no preseason games. But how do you then get your quarterback in that rhythm through times when he's struggling in games? Tell our listening audience what you would do to your quarterbacks to get him back in that rhythm. And by the way, Coach always said, I was an All-Pro, Kurt Warner an All-Pro, and Trent Green an All-Pro. So he knows how to coach the position.
Well, the best thing I think I did as a head coach when I ran my own offense and then when I was just the head coach is make sure the quarterback had enough time on the field to be prepared. I was never restricted like the rules of today or by the COVID virus, and that hurts the quarterbacks. But I'll say this. There right now, there are nine quarterbacks in the league throwing better than 70% complete. Okay.
Nine.
Nine quarterbacks throwing better than 70% complete. That's my goal was always to try to get to 60% when I was coaching the Eagles. Then it went up to 65%. But now people are throwing in the 70% categories, and it's so tough because all the rules favor them. And there's, if you took, I use this comparison all the time. When we were together in 1980, the Cadillac was a beautiful car, technically sound, and had all kinds of technology in it to their scheme, okay? Now, you take the Cadillac of today, the technology in that car and their scheme and building it is so much more sophisticated. People do a lot of things a lot better than we used to do them. If I had given you the opportunity to throw the kinds of stuff they're throwing today, you'd have been a 70% percent completion guy, okay? It's just that much easier. And with Carson's situation, the offensive line being shaky, though getting better with those young kids, and then the receivers being shaky, it hurts him more than any other position. The less practice time hurts him more than the other position, though we still have nine other guys throwing 70% complete. Wow. You know? So you can't always use that excuse. He is never going to be, I think, consistent 70% pass complete. That's just not him.
Is it because of mechanics just innately inaccurate? Is there a specific reason? And I know how hard you used to coach me. Sid Gilman, yourself, yeah. I mean, we're friends now. We're great friends. My wife is sitting up here going, when Coach Miller used to call me at like 11 o'clock at night, what the hell is he calling for? Well, he wants me to look at some tape. You talk about coaching hard, but never went into the game unprepared.
Yeah.
That's the way it was. So,
well, I think Doug sends him all in the game prepared. I don't think
I'm not saying that, but the mechanical side of it, how do you get a guy going when he's a little bit out of rhythm?
Well, first off, I say this to Carol because she's the other coach in the room and I'm watching the games, is that all these comments about, well, he didn't have his foot right or this, I think that's all overrated. Do you think Rodgers worries about where his feet are when he throws 70% complete and more? Certain guys have to have everything perfect to throw perfect. Certain guys, it doesn't matter where their feet are or what they're doing, how they're moving, they throw it accurately.
Patrick Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes is the best example of what I'm saying. In fact, you would grade him on mechanics sometimes poorly, but right. The end result is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think some guys have that innate thing with their hands, their eyes, and what they see, and when they release it, and how they release it, and the tempo with which they release it, it gets there. And I always talk about, again, at home, is ball placement. You can complete a pass, and all of a sudden, he's not a runner. He catches it, though, and it goes 70%. Okay, you had a good day. You completed a pass. But when you throw the ball that is catchable in a comfortable position that allows you to keep moving in the direction you're moving, yards per pass attempt go way up. Yards per pass completion go way up. Scoring goes way up. You know, diving on the ground to catch a ball and you get credit for a completion, to me, is not accurate.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not a great passer. You watch Roger. You watch Mahomes. He startles me sometimes how he throws the ball. Accurately, and the guy doesn't break step.
Yards after catch, right?
Yeah. The quarterback, he's off balance. He's looking one way, throwing the other. It's just some people, there aren't many like him, but there are some people that just have the innate ability to throw the ball accurately, regardless of the mechanics. That's a gift.
And you're listening to the Ron Jaworski Show with my very special guest, Super Bowl champion, head coach Dick Vermeil, and great quarterback coach, understands position as well as anyone that I've ever been around. It's funny, as we're talking about quarterback mechanics, I was a wonk for the mechanics, and I was coached that way, the Sid Gilmans of the world, yourself, coach, that, proper mechanics were so important. But I did change a little bit when I started becoming an analyst, and I would watch Brett Favre.
Yeah.
And I'm going, that's all wrong. And he's thrown 35, 40 touchdown passes, So the game has changed. The mechanics have changed. Yeah. The players have changed. The talents of players have changed. Yeah. So it does make a difference. But a basic fundamental philosophy that I've learned from you, Coach, was balance on offense. And I always use the B word. And I know that was always so important to you. And I know to our listening audience, when the Eagles lose their equilibrium, I always go back to what you used to always do with Mike Martz, your offense coordinator with your world championship team in St. Louis, the St. Louis Rams. And Mike was a pass-happy coach and great at it. You'd always say to him, don't forget number 28. That's Marshall Faulk. Be sure that we have that element of physicality, power running, and balance in our offense. How important is that in today's NFL?
I think it's as important or more important today. Plus, it takes a little pressure off the quarterback. You know, you can hold the other 10 people responsible for winning as well when you hand the ball off. And you hold them responsible for the fundamentals, the techniques they use in blocking. The fundamentals within offensive line play is disintegrated. And I watch them now. There's more injuries because they're all standing up, so their knees are exposed. And no one's bending over and knocking somebody off the ball. There are a few teams that are still old-fashioned and doing that a little bit more. But I just think if you're running, you're paying a running back $15 million a game and you're giving the ball 10 times, doesn't make sense. If I were the owner, I'd say, we shouldn't pay him that much. You know? Let him run the ball. You know, we had Priest Holmes.
Yeah.
When we had Priest Holmes, he was a college free agent at Kansas City, and he came to us as a free agent again. And, my God, he set an NFL record for 27 touchdowns in one season.
Wow.
Why?
You gave him the ball.
We gave him the ball. You know, and hey, the great thing is the young receiver last week. We wouldn't know he was any good if they didn't throw him the ball.
That's right.
You know, sometimes you can give up. You can assume somebody can't do something because maybe you haven't given him enough opportunities to do something.
That makes great sense, Coach.
You know, and that happens. Yep. It happens to all of us.
Yep. And you're listening to the Ron Jaworski Show with Super Bowl champion head coach Dick Vermeil. We are coming to you live from the Downingtown Country Club. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Ron Jaworski Show live on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic. Now back to the Ron Jaworski Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to the Ron Jaworski Show. Nice crowd on hand here at the Downingtown Country Club, practicing their social distancing. Everything is fine and dandy. Thank you. Good to see everyone out here tonight on a beautiful day. I mean, packed on a golf course today. Get a day like this, get out and play some golf. I'm joined by legendary head coach Dick Vermeil, Super Bowl champion, two-time NFL Coach of the Year, and more importantly, a dear friend of not only myself, my family, but this entire area. And Coach, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you an opportunity to talk about the wine industry, because I know Vermeil Vineyards and Vermeil Wines have been doing very, very good. Is it going well?
No, it's not.
Oh.
You know, it's not. You know,
the
forest fires really whacked us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the COVID, you know, we've been closed basically in our main tasting room where we sell wines direct. Our wine club has lost some members because of the pandemic, and people don't want to invest the money in future wines that they haven't, you know, they can't drink tonight. But, and then we lost our 90% of our red grapes due to smoke damage. No vines were burnt. No buildings were burned down. But it was close. But so we won't have much to sell in 2002 and 3 in regard to quality red wines, which are we sell out of our quality red wines now. But so it's tough on us. But you know, we didn't lose facilities like some people lost their homes, lost their wineries. You know, and big names. So it's been a mess out there. So we've had earthquakes, floods. We've had it all. Now pandemics and then fires twice. So it's really hampered us being where we'd like to be in the business. So, but we keep making better wine we've ever made.
That's
not me, but our winemaker and our team. They do a great job.
I know how much of your heart and soul is into the Vermeil Vineyards, and we all wish you the very best and a great comeback with that. And I hope for a lot of things. We get through this pandemic and all the challenges that we've had in this unprecedented 2020 year. But let's get back to football, Coach. And, you know, the one thing that I know is so important is coaching. And, you know, I'm still a strong believer in Doug Peterson. I think he's a fantastic football coach and usually does his best job when he's backed into a corner. However, I will say when I keep looking at coaching changes, not necessarily the head coach, but the success of the Eagles has led to other coaches getting opportunities to move to other teams and coach maybe other positions or move up to a coordinator's role. How important was it for you when, you know, say a Carson Wentz has got a great meeting room with John DeFilippo and Frank Reich and guys like that, and all of a sudden quarterback coaches change, wide receiver coaches change year to year. Say Aaron Moore now coaching the wide receivers. How much of a difference does it make in a coaching staff when coaches move on to other teams and you got to replace them in your system?
Well, you know, Ron, change is not always good, because sometimes you lose somebody of quality that you just can't replace. And you don't know he isn't what you hoped he would be until you coach with him. But sometimes you get somebody that's better than you thought he would be. So, you know, you win and lose in these situations. And when you have constant turnover at a position, then I think it's tough on the overall performance of that team. The offense or the defense, whatever side of the ball is working on it, it's tough. And there, sometimes you make changes that didn't work out. Sometimes you don't make changes you should have made. And sometimes you make changes and, oh, my gosh, what an improvement. Right. And we all learn. We all learn. But, you know, assistant coaches are the heart of a football team. The head coach gets too much credit. And what you've got to do as a head coach, especially when I came back, Ron, is to make sure, number one, the environment within which they're coaching is winning, a winning culture. I mean, you're giving them an opportunity to be as good as they can be as an assistant coach. Then number two, you're giving them football players that really have the ability to take advantage of your coaching. And then number three, you're disciplining the football team to play and work at a tempo that will allow them to take advantage of their new coaches in these kinds of things. And this all adds up. You know, the assistant coaches, to me, my success was based mainly on, and I'm a reflection of the people that helped me be successful. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have, like Marion Campbell, he never had any success as a head coach, but very few people ever coached better. I know last week they were talking about Pittsburgh. The last time Pittsburgh Steelers won four in a row was 1979. Okay?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Did you hear that many times? You know who beat them in the fifth game of the season was you. We beat them 17-14. Now, we didn't have to score 48 points. We only had to score 17. We had to score 17.
One more than they had.
And we played, and Marion Campbell shut Bradshaw down.
Right.
Bunting intercepts a pass and one out in the 15-yard line, runs it to the one.
Coach, I can't remember yesterday, and you remember 1978.
You know, I listened to these guys talk about Pittsburgh won four in a row in 1979. Never did mention it was the lowly old Eagles who beat them. And that was, to me, the turning point of our entire program.
You know, when you talked about, you know, you've taken over some bad programs. Mm-hmm. The Eagles program took us to the Super Bowl. You took over the Rams program, which was like the worst in the 90s. They win the Super Bowl. You go to Kansas City. You take them deep in the playoffs, back after back, year to year to year. What is the biggest thing you have to do when you take over a program that's a perennial loser? What do you instill in them to make them a winner? What would be the thing? You did mention culture and all that, but how important really is that? What do you change first?
Well, first off, you can't change anything until you are consistent enough as the leader to develop trust. Because if they don't believe you, they don't hear you. When they don't hear you, they don't trust you. So pretty quick, as you go, sometimes it takes a little long. You know, at the Rams, the whole first year, they fought me tremendously. Everybody fought me. Everybody. Ownership, I thought I was wrong. And I said, you know, and I had players come up on Wednesday. Honest to God, on Wednesday, come in and say, Coach, the players would really think we're working too hard. And, you know, I said,
players would come into your office.
Yeah. They'd send leaders. The guys that, they think I would sympathize with. And I'd say, you know, some guys, when we start kicking someone's ass, we'll start easing up a little bit. We're a long ways. Maybe we might be 2 years away before you're doing that. Some of you guys might not even be here. But once they know this is the situation they're in, and they're going to have to earn their paycheck by really understanding what trying to get better and not making excuses, just accept what they did wrong and then find a way to do it better. But it's the coach's job to develop an environment and an organization of practice that allows them to get better. You can improve any technique of a poor football player if you give him time. You can improve a guy who swings a 3-iron poorly. You can improve how he may, you may not make him a top pro golfer, but you can improve him. Mm-hmm. But it all takes repetition. Yeah. Yeah, and it just, today, that's much harder on coaches today. Yeah. Much harder.
Speaking of improvement, how does a guy like Travis Fulgham, kind of a journeyman guy, all of a sudden gets an opportunity in Philadelphia, go out and play like he's played the last 2 weeks? And in fact, I use the Pro Football Focus statistical profile of all players, mm-hmm. and they watch every play of every game, evaluate the players. He is the highest-ranked wide receiver in the NFL right now. How does that happen where this guy comes out of nowhere? And I've got my opinion because I looked at the tape, and I'll give you my thoughts. But I would love to hear from you because you've given everyone, you gave the guy the lowest on the roster an opportunity wherever you've been. You believed in those guys and give them a chance. But how does this guy come out of nowhere and play as well as he's playing right now?
Well, first off, in the training camps he's been in, they've been restricted time-wise. So they invest more money in people they've already been coaching that already know what they can do. They invest more time in the guys that they already can count on because they know them, and they have less time to try to develop somebody that, like, he was a 6th-round pick.
Correct.
And so it's easier to eliminate him and move on, just assuming, well, it's a 6th-round pick, you can't play. But in the old days, you had much more time to work with those guys. Even in the Rams, when I went back in 97, we kept all the rookies on our double days out after practice in pads and continued to coach
them.
That's
illegal, coach.
Today it is. It wasn't then. But right. And if we didn't have 11 on 11, then we went 7 on 7 and these other kind of. So you could see these kids and coach these kids. And I think you've got to give Howie some credit. Two people let him go.
Right.
You know,
he didn't
all of a sudden become good enough to make those catches he made. Every catch he made was contested. You know, every catch he caught was contested. It wasn't just, you know, out there and running in air.
Yep.
So you got to give Howie credit for him. You know, he takes the blame for the guys that can't play. So you got to give him credit for those surprise guys. And I love those kind of guys. I've had so much. London Fletcher comes to mind. You know, 5'9", 235-pound linebacker. He plays 16 years, never misses a game.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, you got to
be lucky. Say that again. 16 years.
And never missed a game.
Never missed a game.
Yeah.
Unheard of.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, you got to be a little lucky. But it's a part of a philosophy, too. I came into the league as a free agent. I wasn't a pro football player or an All-American college football. I came out of high school, junior college. And I had great respect and admiration for the kid that really wanted badly to play.
Can you sense that as a coach?
Yes.
That someone wants it more?
Oh, you bet you can. But you got to test them.
Yeah.
I can remember we had a 4th-round pick here as a running back. Carl loved him. Peterson loved him. And I'm watching the one-on-one linebacker versus running back and pass protection, you know, dog blitz pickup.
Yep.
And every time he was next in line, he'd get in back of the line. Okay. Okay. And I remember Louis Jamona was in the same line. And my nephew, every time I looked up, he was blocking the linebacker coming full bore. And this guy, I won't mention his name, he's been back in the line not getting any reps.
I got to do some research on who this was, Coach.
You don't have to. He was out of Arkansas. You don't have to be
People
brilliant.
Are Googling right now, right? Fourth-round pick out of Arkansas.
You don't have to be brilliant to analyze. He didn't really want to play.
Didn't want to play. Well, I, I, I'd like to give my opinion on Fulgham looking at the tape, because I didn't know who this guy was, and all of a sudden the 49er game, you know, he makes the play that wins the game. When I look at the tape, did my research on him quickly, not a fast guy, 4.54.
Fast enough.
But I immediately thought of this guy who I know you love, Mike Quick.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Quick was a 4.5, 4.55 guy, and everyone said he was too slow. I never overthrew Mike Quick. Yeah. When the ball was in the air, you know, he would go get it. He was 4.2 when the ball was in the air.
Yeah. Harold Carmichael.
And Harold Carmichael, those big long strides. But yeah. I'm watching Fulgham going, he stride for stride, and before you know it, the extra gear came into play. Mm-hmm. He could accelerate to go get the football. Last week against Pittsburgh, I couldn't wait till I get the tape Monday morning. I'm looking at this guy, I'm thinking, it's amazing how well he runs his routes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working back to the quarterback, coming out of his break, not drifting up the field, not showing the ball coming to his hands, you know, till the last minute so a defender couldn't. It was like this guy was very skilled. Mm. He was a natural wide receiver. And I learned all those terms from being around you when we talked about our wide receivers saying, how do people miss on guys like that?
The lack of opportunity. Mm. How many times did anyone throw him the ball? If you don't throw him the ball, he's not a wide receiver. He's just a guy running around.
So this guy that falls between the cracks is a no preseason. And
you got to be very careful. This is another theory I've always had with wide receivers. You got to be very careful evaluating speed as the number one thing. A wide receiver that runs 4.6, the defender will never outrun him. If he runs 4.4, he will always be next to the receiver. 12 yards, 15, 18 yards. He may be faster, but he's always going to be parallel or right on the wide receiver. He can cover him. But who catches the ball? This kid caught the ball
right each
time. Now, he might not be as fast as the guy covering him, but the guy doesn't prove that on every snap. He doesn't. The wide receiver, when you're man-to-man like that and bumped and covered tightly and you come down with the ball, there's concentration, guts, courage, unaware of what's going on. He had great concentration on the ball. The other thing, they showed some slow motions, the use of both hands in coordination on the ball. A lot of guys drop the ball because they don't get the thumbs together, properly. God, he remember that one? Like, it was like a picture. You could use it at a coaching clinic.
Right.
So, yeah, you've got to give the personnel department credit and the people. Doug, you got to give him credit for letting him play.
You know, as you were talking about the skills with the hands, at my age now, I guess, I get a lot of random thoughts. Yeah. And we had a wide receiver named Kenny Payne.
Oh, yeah.
You may remember Ken. He was one of those
$9.99.
One of those blue chippers you call that we got from the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
And he went to about three games. He kept dropping the ball. And coach finally said, I'm sending him to an eye doctor.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You sent him to an eye doctor.
Yeah.
And he had bad eyes. He had bad vision.
He did. They weren't coordinated properly. There were a few other things that weren't coordinated properly in him, too, you know.
We won't go there, Coach. I'm saying, Coach, this guy, he's got all this talent. He can't catch
fly.
The ball. And he sent him to the eye doctor to change his prescription.
I remember
he was catching balls.
You mentioned him. We put in a special play in the league opener against Denver. And Denver coming out of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was a special play.
We beat him that opening.
Yeah. And it was a special play. And he goes, and you hit him on a bomb. You know, that was the best play made by his brothers. But he could fly. He was a legit flyer.
All right, Coach, we're going to look a little bit ahead because a big game coming up this week, Baltimore Ravens.
They're all big.
They're all big. But Baltimore is really big and really good. This is a good football team. John Harbaugh's gone down there, and, you know, we always knew the Ravens accentuated defense and going back to the Ray Lewis days and how they, you know, won world championships on defense. But they got this quarterback now, Lamar Jackson, and he's unique.
Right.
I mean, this guy is unique. I mean, he can run it. He can sling it. He can run the option. How do you defend guys like that?
Poorly.
that's what's been
happening. There ought to be a law against some of those things he does. Really. But I'll tell you, that's a complete football team. You know, someone asked me in an interview this morning about the coaches that you think are upper echelon in the league today. And the first guy came to my mind is John Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Now, he's not coaching the offense. He's not coaching the defense, but he is the head coach. And he has a temperament that's consistent. And you know, I've been on the practice field with him. I knew his dad. I know his brother. Football is in his blood. And the leadership skills, his coach's coach, his offensive line coach I've known forever, Joe D'Alessandro. He watches offensive line play. It's old-fashioned.
Yeah.
They got weight on their hands. They're going to try and knock your butt off the ball. And then they have a quarterback. He may not have given it to the guy you thought he was giving it to, and he keeps it. And that guy, and, you know, from his first year to his second year, tremendous improvement in his passing skills.
Right.
His accuracy. He jumped. Good coaching. New offensive coordinator from Atlantic City, for crying sakes, he is.
Yeah.
So it's a well-coached football team. And they're as disciplined as a well-coached football team can be, I think. That's a real attribute.
Do you see success for, you know, I use the term runaround quarterbacks, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Some people think, because I was a pocket passer, I'm saying bad things about guys that make plays with their legs and the read options and zone reads and all those things. And it now is a major factor in the NFL, that quarterbacks that can run, that can do things with their legs. And obviously Carson Wentz is maybe not a Lamar Jackson in that regard, but same style of offensive player. Do you think as time moves on, you're going to see more of these types of quarterbacks?
Sure.
Or are teams leery of risking their quarterback like we saw with Dak Prescott? That play happened on a quarterback draw where he broke his ankle.
Yeah.
It was a called quarterback run. So does that make play callers a little more apprehensive about putting their quarterback in harm's way?
Yeah, you know, maybe. I don't know. There are certain things you've just got to play. You know, and you can be so cautious you eliminate reduce the value of a player's talent. And you're going to see, if all you have to do is watch college football on Saturday.
Yeah.
And watch what the quarterbacks are doing at college today. They're running and throwing. And it's amazing how many kids can throw the ball accurately. Mm. You know, I watched, Clemson Saturday night against Miami. My God, he's a good player.
That kid's going to be super.
Oh, yeah. He's good. Yeah. Now, Burrow, I watched him the year before. He's the most accurate passer I've ever seen coming out of college. Okay. But they're asking him to do more because the defenses are so tough if you don't. And as soon as you give the defense more things to worry about, and you have, like I say, when I came here at UCLA, I was running the Veer offense because I had an option quarterback, okay? I came here, I saw things, even with you in the shotgun. Geez, if I read that in, I thought about it. I didn't have the guts to go ahead and do it because it would be different in the NFL. And I didn't want all that college coach doing these things.
That's Tom Landry was doing it with the Dallas Cowboys.
I'll tell you, I respect John Harbaugh for having the leadership guts to go ahead and do something differently.
Yeah.
First, he had to draft the guy. First round pick.
And move up to get him.
And it shocked a lot
of
people.
Yeah, move up to get him. Right, right.
So I credit the leadership of the organization for doing it. And they make very few personnel department mistakes, too. Right.
Yeah. Coach, always a part of the show, we make a prediction. So I want you to think about it for a second as I give mine. Because I'm really good at this, by the way. I'm like 0-4-1 with the Eagles this year. No, I did pick Pittsburgh last week, so I had that one. But overall, on my picks, against the spread. I do this stuff against the spread because people like to know what I think. I'm not sure I'm always right, but I'm 42-34-1 against the spread.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, you bet.
That's pretty good. Some people are making some Miller Lite beer money on me when they follow my picks.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go this week. I'm going to go with the Ravens 27-24. So that means the Eagles cover the spread. So just want to be sure our listening audience is aware of that. I got the Eagles losing but covering.
Yeah.
Does that mean anything to you?
Well, you know, I can't see them beating, but, you know, you only have to be the best team game day.
Yep.
You know, and there always are upsets. There are always games that all of a sudden, hey, does Kansas City, should they have gotten beat last week? Probably not, but you get feeling comfortable. You know, you get feeling, we're playing a losing team, and all no matter what you say as a leader and the head coach, all of a sudden, you know, some team that has no business beating you beat you. And that happened to me, cost me a playoff berth, and we won 10 games in my last season of coaching and didn't make the playoffs because we went to Buffalo and got beat by a team that won 4 games.
Wow.
You get feeling so comfortable. Well, we'll just go through this. And whenever you lose that air of intensity in preparation, in concentration, and in contact game day, you get yourself beat. So I think they'll be a little bit overconfident. I would be if I were coach. I'd feel pretty good. We'll go there and beat them. But you still have to play the game.
Play.
And I believe they'll beat the Eagles, but I think it'll be a good football game.
All right. So So coach says they're going to cover. So,
you know, I'll tell you about covering. I got so I didn't want anybody in my last few years of coaching to tell me what the spread was because they were too close to right.
Yeah, yeah. Those wise guys are pretty good coaches.
Yeah,
they know
I know it.
Hey, big round of applause for Coach Dick Vermeil joining us here on the Ron Jaworski Show.
I can't
thank the coach enough for taking time out of his crazy schedule. Although he lives just down the road here, and it's always an honor and a pleasure to have Coach join us here on the show. And it's one I always remember every single year. So, Coach Dick Vermeil, thank you so much. And next week, October 21st, we'll be at the Burns Honda store in Marlton. And we got a position player that the Eagles devalue every year, it seems. And he's going to enlighten us on why they do that. Jeremiah Trotter might be the last Pro Bowl linebacker for the Eagles. And I want Jeremiah Trotter to tell me why the Eagles don't value linebackers. So that'll be an interesting show next week. But that'll do it for this week's show here at the Downingtown Country Club. Everyone, please be safe and have a great night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.